Welcome back to JK Moto Podcast, a motorcycle podcast for the everyday rider, covering current bike and racing news and specializing in track days, club racing, and great
entertainment. I have little technical difficulties over
here. We truly do it all. And this week we are brought to you once again by none other than JK Moto Entertainment, as seen behind you up on the wall, or behind us, I guess. Hopefully not behind you. Maybe it's behind you. Maybe you also went and got a cool neon sign, or you have one of our cool stickers.
You gotta sell flags. That's what you need to start selling.
I should sell flags. We could get some JK Moto Entertainment flags.
Because you just have the one for you, but what if I wanted one for my garage?
I will sell you a flag.
Friends and family discount? $5.
I will sell it to you for the same price the website sold it to me.
Fair enough.
But yeah, and we're here to close up the MotoGP 2025 season, and quite honestly, to close up JK Moto Podcast, at least for the foreseeable future. As discussed before, there'll be some more kind of one-off episodes from time to time, and maybe in the future we'll bring the podcast back. Just for awareness, we will keep up the fantasy next year, JK Moto Entertainment, and I'll probably send off little kind of weekly updates either on Instagram or through YouTube or something like that. Maybe I'll finally break into the shorts. Could do the shorts.
Yeah, algorithm going to go crazy.
Yeah, I just don't like the shorts. But anyway, we're here for longer than short tonight, probably about an hour.
At least two shorts long.
Yeah, at least two shorts worth. So if you can stick around for that long, if your attention span's in for it, please stick around with us. Please also subscribe to the YouTube channel and throw a like on this podcast episode. And leave us some comments, say farewell. And if you won the fantasy that we're about to get into, please reach out on Instagram. There'll be a grand prize for you. Or don't. Haven't had too many people reach out yet this season. It's been the same person kind of winning over and over again, but we'll see what happens tonight. So without further ado, let's see if we get into it.
My first track day, I got the pictures back and I was like, I'm never doing that again. On the ground at 100 miles an hour.
We should probably start with fantasy.
All right. Let's pull it up.
Start with the fantasy and see. Watch that be off the app too. We're also having some interesting situations here because this is all of like one day after the end of the 2025 season, and they've like gotten rid of everything from 2025 already.
Yeah, they're already projecting all the new stuff for next year in February.
Which is nice. Because I was trying to figure out when the Valencia test was. I thought it was going to be today. Usually it was, I thought I remembered it being one day after, but it is in fact tomorrow, which will actually be Tuesday. So it'll be a day late. So unfortunately we don't have any Valencia test news for you, but that's okay. Like I said, we're kind of done with, I'm going to say it too many times tonight. We're done with the podcast. The podcast is done after this. If you hate to see it go, let me know. We'll do what we can to bring her back. But for a little while at least, we'll be taking a long break. But the fantasy, we had a total of 8 players playing this year, and all the way down in last place. I hate to bring this up for you, but all the way down in last place, looks like you only got one round at a total of 128 points, at least in our league. This is Kurnax from Turkey with 128. I already said that. In seventh place, getting 67.5 points last round and a total of 2,304 points, is Wolfs from Italy.
Also joined us halfway, like partway through the season, most of the way through the season.
Yeah,
actually.
I think his points caught up though. So, I think like they'd take a second to load in the league. But yes, also joining us kind of partway through the season. In sixth place, we have none other than Kelly OJ himself from the United States, getting 91.5 points in the last GP, averaging 127.19, and totaling 2,762.5 points. In fifth place, we have Sad Satellite, also from the United States. Last GP, 147.5, quite a few for that last GP, totaling 3,213 with an average of 145.98. Cam Head in third, 78.5, which is not much from the last round, total of 3,378.5. Did I skip myself? I did.
Absolutely skip yourself in fourth.
And had an average of 157.14. It puts me at the top because it's my league. In fourth, behind Cam Head, but before Sad Satellite, in fourth is myself, Jobert 2003. Last GP, 143 points, average of 152.9 and 3,354. Ended right in the middle. Can't be too mad about that. In second place, which you can also reach out also for one prize, will be Shifty with 147.5 points, averaging 168.74, and with a total of 3,691. Now, here's what's crazy. Shifty had a better average than the man that took first place. But the man that took first place, I think, took it right there at the end because he got 193 points. He saved that last boost till the very end, knew where to place to get 193 points, averaged 168.12, and finished the season off with 3,723.5. Once again, that is Shaky Moto from the USA. Please reach out to us on Instagram and or Facebook, and we will send you over a grand winning prize for the 2025 season. And that wraps up the JK Moto Entertainment 2025 MotoGP fantasy season.
I feel like it's so surreal to think that that's it. But now I know next year, Ducati Lenovo might pick that team.
Yeah.
And wherever the budget has left, Marquez, and then wherever the money goes after that, we'll figure it out.
Hey, you had some like progress from last year.
That is true. Because I picked my first year, I just picked riders I liked.
Yeah.
I didn't know who was good. I just know I liked Jorge Martin. This year, I picked riders I liked and some that were good. The problem is I picked Jorge Martin again, and then he was not there for most of the season.
He was
blew both. It was him and Agüero and the Marquezes. I think I blew my trades to swap them out.
Mm-hmm.
But then second half, Marquez obviously wasn't there. And then Alex did all right, and then he started doing good toward the end again. And then the team points was coming from the Ducati, which I didn't like the Ducati Lenovo team, which I had not picked at any point. So,
yeah, and we'll see. Next year, I might try and run a Grid Rival. I know I've brought that up multiple times, but I think Grid Rival is still going. I just think there's something about where I'm located, or where we're located, rather, that does not allow the Grid Rival to work or happen.
Ugh.
So I'll look into that next season. And like I said, I'll be putting announcements out. Which just a quick shout out to myself.
Shout outs.
If you're listening to this on one of the podcast platforms that we're on, thank you for listening. Appreciate it. Give us a follow over there. Not super important anymore, but like I said, there'll be some one-off episodes coming out here and there. But definitely head over to the YouTube channel because that is where the updates will continue to come. So if you like the entertainment that you've gotten from JK Moto Entertainment and the JK Moto podcast, the JK Moto Entertainment YouTube channel will stay alive and well. We will continue to put out great content completely related to almost exclusively motorcycle track days. And just a quick like to touch on that, I do think it's kind of funny. It's a relatively small channel. Sometimes I get some street jockeys or street Rossies coming in and trying to talk smack and whatever else. And I'm not going to say that all my content's great. Never would. But share it with your track riding friends or people that are interested in the racetrack, because there is a lot of stuff in there that is specifically tailored for the racetrack. There's some stuff that's a relatively street-related, just to try and get all the motorcycles. But the whole point of the channel is to get motorcyclists aware of track days. And we're going to continue that content and continue pushing it so we can keep this sport growing. And hopefully a little bit more club racing content in the future. We'll see what the work schedule and budget and everything else has in store for us. But that is what you can expect for the JK Moto Entertainment channel. Without further ado, we knocked out fantasy. We self-advertised. It is time to fully discuss MotoGP.
You see Raul Fernandez up there?
I did see Raul Fernandez up there.
So my question is this. Not KTM, obviously, but we know Pedro Acosta figured it out more than KTM figured it out.
Truth. Yeah, the moral of the season for KTM is they did not figure it out.
Yeah, because Pedro was figuring it out.
Pedro figured some stuff out.
Marinyala showed up, but like he didn't finish it. Neither did Jorge Martin. I'm guessing both injury-related or bike-related possibly.
Yeah, so Jorge Martin, 100% injury from what I'm taking and what I heard, was just couldn't take it anymore, left the race a little early, but he was there.
A lot of DNFs this round, too.
Yeah, which, I mean, keep in mind, we're going to talk a little bit about the whole season. Like, it's wrapped up, it's over. Realistically, the last race was almost just more of a, like...
formality. Championships, points were pretty much set.
Yeah, like, first through third was done.
All there was left to do is just for Beck Nye to lose more. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, well, and Bez to hit his last bet.
His last race.
Yeah, and his last bet, which we'll talk about that in a little bit. But
it's always curious to see how the tire choices matter so much more on Sunday than they do on Saturday, just because it's a longer time distance for the race. Because Bez was, like, what, third on Saturday, but on Sunday it was first, and, like, by a decent margin.
Yeah. No, Bez kicked in the butt, and, I mean, he said that Saturday really kind of was a slap in the face for him. He knew he had to figure it out early, get ahead, and get moving. So he did that on Sunday. But back to to KTM and more importantly, maybe Aprilia, which is all in the Bez train. I think you were about to ask me if...
Yeah, what's good with Raul Fernandez? He has some really good races not the last couple, but there's been a few races in the later races, specifically the one when him and Bezzecchi was battling a few GPs ago, and now he's had a few flashes of brilliance later in the season. And I don't know if it's because he's always been that good, but he's just had been not so good at qualifying. So he's further back in the grid, and then he has to work more to come up in the grid. I'm curious to see what he would look like if he had better qualifying times. Because I'll give you an example, Quartararo. Quartararo can drop a hot lap at qualifying, and we see what happens on that Yamaha as the race goes on. He just falls further and further back to the middle of the pack.
Yeah, can't quite hang.
Like, doesn't even end up in top five half the time, right? I'm curious to see what Raul Fernandez can continue to do if he starts from further up in the grid.
Yeah, I mean, Raul Fernandez, rookie 2 years ago, I want to say.
Yeah. He's one of the riders I'd be looking forward to seeing next year, because he's still with Aprilia next year, right? Specifically Trackhouse. So he'll still be on that same package. Or not really the same package, but the same manufacturer. So it'd be a similar package.
Correct. And so the biggest question I've had this season, which is involved in this topic,
trying to pull up the results?
No, I was pulling up next year's grid. But what did Aprilia do, and did they figure it out? And the hard part I'm having with that is, so in the past we had Maverick Vinales and Aleix Espargaró on the Aprilia for really since I've been watching. I don't remember who it was with Aleix before Maverick, because I remember when I started watching, Maverick was still with Yamaha. Then he had his downfall, right? And then he went over to Aprilia. And they had some good weekends. They also had some not so good weekends.
The problem with Aprilia in the past was it felt like they were just inconsistent. They had the capability to do well, but if it's like anything like last year, they had a couple of wins or a couple of really good performances, but overall,
they couldn't stick it together.
They couldn't put it together. Whereas this year, they were all right, and then Bezzecchi's really been putting it together. Jorge Martin was absent most of the season, so he was at Salvatore.
Yeah.
Just making guest features to ride the bike. Much the way that Buliga's doing now for Ducati, now that Mark's injured. So you really had one factory bike on the grid. And there's only so much you can do with one factory bike on the grid, even if you're, really good. Because it was also Bezzecchi's first year on the bike, so he took a while to get used to it.
Very true.
And then you had the Trackhouse boys, but that's not the factory team. It was a satellite team. And they're doing,
factory bikes, but yeah.
But they're doing all right. You had a Gura, looks really good in the beginning as a rookie. Not that he's looking bad now as a rookie, so he's performing as we expect a rookie to do, but definitely been outshined by Ferman Aldeguer later in the season when it comes to in terms of rookies. Mm-hmm. Definitely not the slowest rookie on the grid, though. And then Fernandez, you didn't really see that much from him compared to the later half. Some okay performances. So it just seems like as the year went on, Aprilia overall just got stronger and stronger, specifically because of the performances of Bezzecchi and now Fernandez. So I'm curious to see what happens next year if we continue this trajectory and then we start giving Ducati a real run for its money, where the grid is more colorful than just the red bikes and the blue bikes, which are just reskinned red bikes.
My question is, did Aprilia figure it out? Or had Aprilia actually always had it figured out? They just didn't quite have the rider bike package together. Because, what we saw in the past was these inconsistent riders. But I would argue Maverick has always kind of been an inconsistent rider. He's been on the grid forever.
Maverick is something I really was looking forward to seeing on KCM after the first few flashes of brilliance around the year before he got injured.
Yeah.
And then you just haven't seen it post after the couple of crashes. You just have not seen that anymore.
No, not that close. But I mean, but that's also low-key classic.
I thought he and Acosta would be the package to take KTM.
It felt like it. I feel like it should have been.
Yeah, but Acosta still held it down.
Yeah.
Props to him.
Yeah, despite whatever that bike was not doing.
Yeah, still got P4 in the constructors?
Yeah, I mean, KTM the
drivers?
They were decent. But that's the funny part, too, is that Acosta, they asked him, if there's one thing you wish out of your KTM for 2026, what is it? And he said, grip. He didn't care about speed. Doesn't care about anything else. He just wants grip, which means that boy is struggling. And I think, I used to call it...
You see some of the replays, you'll see him slide.
It's, yeah, but I used to call it rookie moves on his tires. I'm wondering if he just, that was the only way to get anywhere to do anything, was he had to use a soft tire and he had to just use the crap out of it to get the bike to do anything. And that's still a little bit of a, like, in my opinion, a little bit of a rookie move. Not move, but a rookie, you know, whatever.
True, but like sometimes it comes on riding style, but also he's the only one doing that with the KTM. There's nobody on a KTM further up in the grid order than he is.
No, I agree.
So clearly whatever he's doing what he thinks he has to be doing to make that bike work. And compared to his other teammates, be it factory or non-factory, it's the most productive out of them, with the exception of Maverick Vinales at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, that's what's kind of crazy, is even, you know, even with that, like, I'm going to burn through this tire so fast that I'm not going to be anywhere near the top anymore, he's still finishing ahead of, you know, Brad Binder and everyone else. So
I think he has more podiums this year than he did last year. He's, like, been a frequent guest on the podiums.
Yeah, well, relatively.
Never P1, but decent chunk of P2s and poor P3s guy. For the sprints and the GPs.
Poor guy still has not won a race. Or a sprint.
Yeah, I really wanted it for him. Yeah. I was surprised Raul Fernandez got it before Pedro did, just based off the performances of the year in general.
Yep.
And then every time he is, like, in the lead, he cannot keep it. It's like a dogfight.
Yeah, well, I wonder if there isn't a little bit of, like, oh, if Bez can do it, I can do it, coming from Raul, right? Because I think previously he was kind of nowhere to be seen on the Aprilia because, like, well, no one was anywhere to be seen on that bike. So I think there's a little bit of that. But yeah, it will be, I think next year will be super fun. I hope Jorge comes back in tip-top shape. I hope Marquez comes back in tip-top shape. I hope whatever Aprilia had, they continue, and Bez comes out swinging. Jorge, I'll give him a little bit of grace at the beginning of the season to actually get used to it.
We'll see the Jorge that we thought we were going to see at the beginning of this year. We'll see. It just took a year.
Yeah. Yeah, hopefully.
I'm glad he stick with Aprilia, because when he was trying to swap out halfway through the season, everybody was like, "What are you doing?
Yeah, where are you going to go?"
Especially after seeing Bez perform on that bike, it's like, okay, what are your options? Where are you going
to go? Yeah, you know, the only thing I was thinking, too, at the end of the season was, like, what if Jorge had taken the factory Ducati seat and Marquez had been on the factory Aprilia this year?
I still think, Mark, if Bez can do that, I still think Aprilia might... Oh, Bez and Mark? And then maybe he doesn't mentally fold like what it looks like Pecco did?
I think they could be quite the power couple.
Yeah.
And the other interesting news...
With the no front end issues?
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of Marquez, a couple of things on the Marquez brothers. One, you know, it is official. Mark Marquez is now the number one. He's the champion. I don't know if they will make him take the number one plate or not, but that was a rumor. Alex Marquez officially held down number two. They are also the only riders on the grid that made it to Q2 in every round that they raced.
Consistent.
Which is, yeah, that's kind of impressive.
Consistent performance.
Pretty cool. Alex Marquez will be on a factory bike next year. He's getting a 2026 Ducati.
He's getting a 2026 Ducati while still with Gresini?
Yep, with
Gresini. So will he get the DG treatment?
Yep. So him and DG will both be on factory bikes, leaving Aldeguer and Morbidelli on the GP25s.
I am curious to see Gresini next year, just because, like, they'll have Alex and Fermin Aldeguer. And Aldeguer's been doing pretty good the second half of the season. I'm excited to watch him continue to race.
Yeah, that's the hard part.
He seems to be aggressive.
Yeah, well, and you think about how good Alex did this year. And next year he's going to be... He said he's excited but a little cautious to be on the 2026 because now there's no... excuse.
Yeah, there's no excuse for his performance. So
he has to. He
it'll
has
like,
to.
It'll
do
be like Pecco and Mark. Is like, we have front end issues. Like, sure, dude.
Do you?
Sure.
Do you?
But why can't you just ride the tractor fast, dude?
Yep. And then Mark, unfortunately, is not going to be there for any of the testing in Valencia. At least not riding. He's got to get all healed up. But he also, it sounded like, and this is mostly just rumor, but I'm going to put it out anyway. But it sounded like he kind of had an offer from Ducati to further his contract. And he told Ducati, "Nah, fam, I'm good. I got to see what everything's looking like at the end of next year." So right now he's contracted 2025, 2026. He's not ready to just jump in with Ducati in 2027, which is arguably a very smart move because who knows what 2027 actually involves.
The 2027 rule change.
Yeah. So there's the rule change, bike development, who's been already testing everything, who's already got bikes. Like, everyone's got to already have bikes back in the paddock ready to go.
Everybody's got the ideas of something.
Yeah, but, like, realistically, who's going to come out of the gate swinging, and how crazy is that season going to be when everything takes off and you have one bike that's like, well, we just need a little bit more testing, but now we figured it out. And I think it'll really kind of even up the books a little bit because it puts everyone right back at the beginning. Also, we saw Luca Marini pulled out of seventh place, which was a really big deal for Honda.
Because he's one of the people, like, not for many of the main teams I like look at, but he's one of the, like,
yeah.
The reason my team does something good, I'm like,
good job, bud. You did it.
I guess we just put that anywhere. As opposed to Juan Mir, it's like, did he finish the race? And then it's like, doesn't lay the bike down all weekend. Good job, buddy.
Yeah, poor guy. He wrecked. Was that this weekend?
He wrecked this weekend.
In the sprint?
The sprint, I think he wrecked Luca out. But in the race, he got hit by someone else being aggressive.
Yep.
Which, like, you hate to see it because how that will be remembered is going to be, look at that. Juan Mir didn't finish another weekend.
Yeah, unfortunately, on the results, it just says DNF. It doesn't say, like, DNF by knockout or anything like that.
And that's happened, like, that has happened to him more time. Like, he has been wiped out by someone else's mistake more times than some people in the grid have been down all season. The problem with that is, because he has a history of just dropping the bike and the bike going down, they'll just see it as like, oh yeah, Juan Mir crashes bikes. Yep. That's what he does. And you can teach a fast rider to not crash the bike better than you can teach a slow rider to be fast, or however you phrase it, but he puts the bike objectively down too often.
But a rider that just crashes bike?
That's it.
Just period? That's all he does? I don't know if that's teachable.
I'm happy he got that one podium for him. But if you tell a manufacturer, I'll get you one podium all year, and I have a 60% chance of putting your bike, making it a wad, just wadding it up, I don't think they'd take that.
I wonder if Honda wouldn't be doing better if they weren't always building new bikes.
Well, the money could be going somewhere better. Like, if you just have Luca Marini, if you had two Luca Marinis, and I'm not saying Luca Marini is like a P1 person, but Luca Marini's been consistently getting top 10s.
Yeah.
Sometimes, like,
since the summer break that Honda finally made.
Yeah, if Honda's like, if you had to pick that, I'll give you consistent top 10s.
Yeah.
You know where you've been, you know where you currently are, you know what the bike is, but I'll give you consistent top 10s, or I will chase a podium every week and wad it up. One of those things is way cheaper, and I think the manufacturers would prefer way more than the other one.
Oh, yeah. Well, and, you know, to that point, Luca Marini brought it home in seventh place this weekend, pulling Honda out of the concessions, or at least one rank lower or higher or whatever, so they don't have as many concessions, which, like, kind of sucks because they don't get as much time for testing, but also is better for them because it's also less money they have to spend. Because anytime they have testing, obviously they're going to take it, but realistically, like, you're paying your rider, you're paying... Everyone to be out there, that costs money. And then also, you know, it pulls them out, showing that everyone recognizes, hey, you did make progress. Like, Honda is kind of back in the normal running, if you will.
It's kind of weird because, like, Luca Marini, I feel like low-key is in competition with Quartararo because Quartararo, even though he could get higher up in the qualifyings, just falls back to where Luca Marini just is.
Yeah. Yeah, the Japanese bikes
get it. I think he was, like, in 12th at some point during the race, and I was like, oh, come on, man. Don't like this.
Yeah, poor Quartararo.
Because if he doesn't qualify really, really good and then fall back, he's just there in the middle of the pack.
You know, I will say he had a better season this season than he did last season.
He's still Yamaha, they're still my people.
Yeah, they did a lot better this season. I was happy for that. Sad part, the issue, the hard part is that they still just didn't quite do good enough.
Yeah.
And I struggle because... We've been saying this all year, and I'm going to keep saying it, sadly, but 2026 almost feels like a wash. Because 2027 is right around the corner.
Yeah, but we'll see what they do, and we'll see what we get.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where it's like, you just look at it. You're like, you don't have any expectations. You just see what they do.
Yeah.
That's how I feel when I watch them. And whenever they do decent, I'm like...
Yeah, it'll be, I don't know, it'll be interesting.
Like, I have such a sliding scale. Juan Mir doesn't crash a weekend.
Good job.
Luca Marini gets top 10. Quartararo does anything cool.
Wrecks a bike, but he was pushing beforehand.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like a sliding scale. It's different for different manufacturers.
Well, and the other thing I realized, too, is Marc Marquez, I think, previously I was wondering if he would retire after 2026, which I still won't say is completely out of question, because anything could happen. And if he gets another bad injury or something, you know, knock on wood. Hang on, gotta go. But realistically, I think that Mark is going to chase at least one title after the rule change, because that'll put him in a category that not everyone gets to be in, but a category that I'm pretty sure Rossi and a bunch of the older legends are in, which is
they're able to adapt.
Well, just multiple different
rule change.
Rule changes are bike size changes, right? There was the big one for Rossi was the 500cc to the 1000cc. So going from the two strokes to four strokes, he was still able to win. So I think that'll be a big, like, he wants to get his name in the record books for that, you know, in the history books. And also, I almost want to imagine that he's keeping that door open a little bit for 2027 for, is there another manufacturer that I think I could win with? Either do I go back to Honda to, like, you know, finish off my glory days with Honda, or could I swap over to Aprilia or KTM and grab a third manufacturer and do something that I don't know if anyone's ever done, actually. Pretty cool. There's a lot of, for me anyway, being a Mark fan, there's a lot of unknowns. The one thing I do know is that he is still in good form as of now. We'll see what happens next year, and we'll see who else is out there to compete with him. But he didn't, like this year, there was no one there to compete with him, really.
So at the end, he had Bezzecchi.
Yeah, but even then, you know, when, and people, you could argue like, oh, well, Alex, you know, was he giving a run for his money? How many times was Mark just sitting behind people, and then whenever whenever he was ready to pass, he just kicked it up and went.
Oh, did you see who the flag waver was?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Lorenzo?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty cool.
That was kind of cool for the last one of the season. Yeah. It surprised me a little bit, because usually it's some random celebrity.
Yeah, I saw, like, is that Jorge Lorenzo, like,
hey, that's that guy. It's another MotoGP guy. Yeah, no, that, yeah, I thought it was fitting. That was cool.
That's another legend. That's a guy.
Yep. But yeah, I think it'll be interesting, because I'm hoping that Mark has, like, some good battles next year and actual, like, battles. I don't think that Mark was riding at 100% this year.
True, but I will say that we did get a lot of good battles even when he was in the lead with just other places on the grid, but, like, he himself wasn't participating in the battles. And then after he was out for the season, we did get those battles up on the grid.
Yeah.
You had Bezzecchi, Fernandez, you had Alex v. anybody, you had Acosta up there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Bez, Alex, yeah. Alex Acosta, and it seemed like it was, like,
occasionally DG Morbidelli nipping at the heels to try to get up there.
It seemed like it was kind of fun, too, because it would be different on the sprint and the race almost every weekend.
Yeah.
And that was cool. That was super cool.
But the top three after he left definitely ended up being his brother, Bezzecchi, and Pedro Acosta. It was definitely the top of the competition once he was gone, which is cool, because that's three different manufacturers.
Yeah.
And then you had guest features from Fernandez,
Aldeguer. Pretty sure that Pedro pulled fourth for Pecco.
It's Bezzecchi third, Pedro four, Pecco fifth. Yeah. After Pecco crashed out, in corner four?
Yeah. Yeah, he did do that.
That has not been a good year. I don't want to dwell on it too much, because it feels like you're beating a dead horse, just picking on a guy that's clearly down, but, like, wasn't his year.
No, definitely not. Hopefully 2026 is better. Hopefully the bike's better. Like I said, I would love to see Mark, Pecco, Alex.
I don't think I've ever seen him just do that bad
Bez,
for a season.
Pedro, Quartararo,
yeah,
maybe. I doubt it. I don't think Yamaha's going to pull anything out of the butt like that. But
I'm not saying they can't.
Yeah,
but I don't think they will.
I don't think they will.
I'll believe when I see it. How about that?
There you go. But yeah, and Jorge next year. So we've got a bunch of good top riders. They're all
sticking on the
same
machinery. It
feels
like we have a handful of, like, known quantities based on this season's results, and then a bunch of, like, potential that on paper could be.
My only real fear for next year is two things. But my two real fears are that Aprilia does the same thing they do every year, where they don't show up with good machinery for the first half. And I'm hoping that that's different, because they have a solid set of riders now.
They have a solid set of riders now. Cool. Well, they're riding Aleix and Maverick for a hot minute.
It feels like,
we'll see.
For the past however many years, Ducati has been the one manufacturer that comes
out the gate
swinging. knows what they're doing. They've got a solid package, and then they continue to build. It feels like everyone else is also slowly catching up.
Well, Lucati's advantage is also they had so many satellite bikes on the grid. They can just get data from everybody, and then their satellite teams are also stacked.
Yeah,
because at Aprilia you have Jorge Martin and Bezzecchi, and then the satellite team you have other riders. Granted, Fernandez has been doing good, right? But Ducati is like, all right, who's your main team? All right, you got the 2-time world champion and a 7- or 8-time world champion. Who's on your satellite? Alex Marquez, who's been real good this year, and a brand new rookie from an Aldeguer. But then VR46, you've got DG and Morbidelli, and DG and Morbidelli are at least averagely known quantities. I'm not saying they're like podium every weekend, but like,
yeah, they're pretty good. I think
they're not rookies.
I think one of them suffers a little bit from Ducati inflation, but yeah.
But like, I'm like,
he's got a friend in the paddock.
But of your satellite riders, they're at least known quantities. They're at least midfielders at worst.
Yeah. I'll give you that. I'll give you that. Besides the one. But yeah. Yeah.
Also, speaking of VR46, what happened to Morbidelli this weekend? He was... I had to rewind it. I couldn't believe what I saw. They do the warm-up lap.
So...
And he comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Aleix Espargaró.
Yeah.
He comes in and clips the back of his bike.
Uh-huh.
And went, like... What?
So I put myself in that scenario because I just thought about it. I haven't started in that many races. And the grid, when you're a new racer, I think is one of the scariest things. You've done track days. You've been on the racetrack.
I forgot. Morbidelli is a new racer.
Yeah.
Thanks for reminding me of that.
There you go. But you've been passed by people. Like, I've been passed by people close. I've passed people close. I've had some close calls out on the track. All of that stuff I'm comfortable with. But lining up on the grid is like this unknown because I haven't done it that many times, right? And I think that's a little bit of a like nervousness or fear that every new racer has. Maybe it's just me. Let me know in the comments. But I think that is like, okay, you're going to go out for a warm-up lap and then you're going to come around and you're going to line up on the grid. And I mean, when you go to new racer school, that's like the afternoon is practicing lining up on the grid and doing race starts, right? Because you haven't ever just sat on the racetrack, pinned it, and gone with people in front of you or not, right? And that's like, that was one of my biggest fears was, am I going to run into the guy in front of me? Is the person behind me going to run into me? Am I going to take off fast enough that I'm not a problem to them? Am I going to take off slow enough that...
I have seen people whiff race starts.
Yeah, right? All of those fears. But you would think that, you know, a non-new racer, maybe he's a new racer, maybe it's a different Morbidelli in there, would know how to line up.
Where's Morbidelli and what have you done with him?
Because, yeah, he came around... Because
he had him hot, like it looked like. Well, it looked like he was in the middle of trying to turn out of the way. What it looked like was the red bike stopped abruptly in front of him, which kind of makes sense because it was in his grid box and you have to hard stop to, was it the launch device,
mm-hmm.
the hole shot device,
mm-hmm.
to get that. So his back tire went up, and then Morbidelli like hadn't turned in time. It looks like caught him off guard. Like maybe he wasn't spatially aware. Like that's his grid box. He's stopping there.
I don't know how you come around, and like I understand you don't know where everyone is on the grid. But I don't know how you come around and you follow that closely behind a bike, knowing that any of these bikes could stop at any moment on any spot in the grid
just
to
do a stoppie. Yeah.
And
because like, sometimes they'll engage though from like the few starts, well, more than a few starts I've watched, it looks like sometimes they'll just strip engage the whole shot wherever.
Yeah.
And then ride it to the grid box.
Yeah, it's not always in their box.
And so the fact that he was already in the area of grid boxes is like, and the guy hadn't. Yeah, like it could happen at any point.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And
Then he laid it down.
And then he laid it down. He didn't just ride over. He just like and fell down. Luckily, they didn't have to do a delayed start because that would have been, oh man, dude, I can't imagine.
You know,
he tips the bike over.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he just wasn't locked in. I don't know. But like, it didn't really matter long term because the last race of the season, and like they're for the most part, people were kind of stuck where they were. But there's always a chance for more points because like you never know who doesn't finish.
So
like
I'm gonna be honest and a little rude. I have not that much respect for Morbidelli at all.
As a racer, or because of that one instance?
No, as a racer in general, I watched him just struggle, and then he got given a ride on the best bike on the grid, and wasn't able to do anything with it. And keep in mind, he was with Pramac on the factory bike. It's not like I'm talking about this year where he's on the last year's bike or last year.
Oh, yeah, because the Pramac team had the factory bike.
Yeah. He got picked up by Pramac, and that was supposed to be like his turning around, and then Pramac didn't want him anymore. And who picked him up? His buddy at VR46 himself, and is just keeping him alive. And I do think that that is a rider that does just rely on Ducati inflation. And I hate to say that about someone, because like MotoGP riders are, even the worst guy on the grid is better than anyone else in the world, arguably, right? But that's just how I feel. And so to see that in the last race of the season, I'm just like, bro, that's embarrassing.
Yeah.
And that's rough. Because like I said, like I tried to put myself in that scenario, and I don't know how I would mess that up. And I'm sure I could, but I'm so like hyper-focused when I'm coming up to the grid because I'm so worried about everything. Like, that is the pinnacle moment right before the race. That is where you should be the most locked in, and it feels like he was chasing a butterfly off in some other direction.
It's crazy because when they do like the helmet cams of like this race start, it is kind of claustrophobic.
It's tight. It's tight. It's nuts. And I can...
Just, oh, there's the sound of just... Because the cameras and your home audio will never do it justice of being in the space. You're just in there between like what, almost like 20-something bikes, 20 bikes, all pinning the throttle.
Yeah, and those things are actually just full.
Just wheelie control, holding the revs wherever it's going to hold it, not launching the front end up when they let it go. And you're just hearing that all around. And you see people, some people get good launches, some people don't. So like you see people start to fall behind or some people pull ahead. Mm-hmm. And you have to navigate that.
Yes.
Through the pool of different velocities moving forward, all as you try to lock into turn one and then not be in the wrong place at the wrong time because you can't all occupy the same piece of tarmac. Yeah. It's like, all right, where are you going to start turning? Well, because like, it's, so you want to be over here, but like this guy's already leaned over. What are you going to do?
If it had been...
That run into turn one's always like
20 wild. Seconds later and Morbidelli was behind Aleix, we'll say, well, you can give him the same riders and Aleix stalled it on the start and Morbidelli ran into the back of him then, okay. Got it.
Yeah.
But coming up to the grid box, and Aleix didn't do anything out of random. It wasn't even, like you said, a stoppy way back on the grid, way at the back. No, it was in his grid box spot, like in his box. He stopped. That's why you saw him turn around. He's like, what is going on here? Did I do something? And they're like, nope, that was all Franco. So anyway, who else was I going to talk about? Oh, I got to talk about Oliveira because... It made me a little sad. I forgot that he was leaving us, but I got reminded.
This was last year?
That was his last race in MotoGP. He is headed, though, to World Superbike.
You know who else is headed to World Superbike? Chantra.
Really? Okay, Samakat Chantra?
Yeah, he didn't do much of anything this year.
No,
but
which is fair.
Yeah. Granted, he's a rookie.
Interesting.
That news came out a couple weeks after our discussion about how he, like...
Yeah. Wasn't really there doing anything.
Yeah.
But, so you have... I don't want this weird...
The overlay with the website is so very different from the overlay from the app since they reset it.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm looking...
If I had known it was going to be like that...
I'm looking at the lineup for next year. Because we have Bagnaia, Marquez on Ducati, Lenovo... DG is with the R46. Grassini's still got Marquez and Aliguer. Franco Morbidelli will be with VR46. Pedro Acosta has been rumored as a target for VR46.
That'd be interesting.
But that's whatever. Yep, KTM. All four RC16 riders, Brad Binder, Pedro Acosta, Maverick, and Nea, are contracted until the end of 2026. Cool. Aprilia will have Jorge Martin and Bezecchi. Yep. Raul Fernandez and Ayagura. Sweet. Yamaha, this is where it gets interesting, is going to have Fabio Quartararo, Alex Rins. Okay, we already knew that. But Pramac.
They're not keeping Miller. Are they? What's Pramac have? Who's Pramac for next year?
Pramac is going to have Toprak.
So we...
Rezgatlioglu.
Yep, and then who else?
And Jack Miller will stay
because he was
on a new one-year contract.
No. I'd be curious to see what Toprak's going to do because we saw Buliga. He did get some points for his first year on a GP bike on such short notice.
Yeah, and I'm that's what I was looking for is like to see where Buliga is going to go, if he's going to go anywhere. And he's staying at... In World Superbike on the Ducati. But it'll be really interesting.
I think that's a cool opportunity. Like, hey, this guy's going to want to do MotoGP. And he's like,
yeah.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, I will.
And then he got a point. He's like,
He got off that bike. You know what he said about the aerodynamics? What
he said?
He said that it actually does affect the bike way more than can ever be described in words. Which, like, I'm over here saying it can't affect it that much because I see riders ride without it all the time and they're perfectly fine.
Yeah, it was that one time when some dude's aerodynamics broke and you watched them, like, wrestle the bike.
Yeah.
Or get sucked in the dirty air. Or that one time
that Mark Marquez didn't have a foot peg and still rode around for 3 laps.
All right, he's him. All right, he's him.
But yeah, no, he had some crazy stuff to say. He said it was actually quite the crazy experience, and that those bikes are not the same at all, which makes sense. But yeah, so Top Rack's coming to MotoGP on, unfortunately, a Yamaha, which is great. Glad to get you in MotoGP, but you're old, so no one's really like.
I mean, you have to understand it. Top Rack's probably like, I've made my money, I've made my impact on World Superbike. I just want to do the highest level of sport to say that I did it. And if my only foot in the door is Yamaha, I'll take it just to say that I did before I stopped racing.
Yeah, but he just won a World Superbike Championship, and he could just keep winning championships and wait for something better.
True. I'm not disagreeing with you.
He could have come in 1 year and then been on a level playing field.
I'm not disagreeing with you, but maybe that's just what he wants. Yeah, think.
Yeah,
okay. You win a World Superbike Championship, the money you make, theoretically, if you just wanted to like lay low, you could live off that for the rest of your life.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
So you don't know what like how hungry he is. You don't know how content he is. You don't know like what his plans are. And you don't know if he's using this as a stepping stone to do more. Right? Granted, he could have stayed in World Superbike, but he doesn't know if that contract would have been there the next year, especially if that's something he really has his heart set out on.
Yeah, and I mean, he does. He's mentioned that. You know, he does want to do MotoGP or did really want to do MotoGP. And so I can understand that.
Also, maybe he feels that there's no more challenge in Superbike. And he wants to challenge himself, and he feels that that's where the competition lies, because at the end of the day, he's a racer, and he wants to be with the best of the best.
Yeah.
Because you saw those gaps he was installing, those people in the World Series. Like, dude, he was doing stoppies, running gas, and then doing it again to get a good stoppie.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, look, man, I want the smoke.
Yeah. Yeah, I just wish he had gone somewhere other than the Yamaha.
That's true.
But it did get him in the door. Hopefully he can stick around to see the rule changes and see if he can't get.
It would be really cool if he'd get him on like one of the Ducatis. Yeah. Or an Aprilia even.
Yeah. Well, that's what I would love to see him on Trackhouse.
Yes, I'm saying, yeah.
Yeah. Throw Iaguro over to Pramac.
He's a rookie. He's got a couple more years.
He'll be fine. He's young. He'll be fine. But that is what we're going to see. And then Miguel Oliveira is headed to World Superbike on the BMW team. So he literally just swapped places with Top Rack.
Maybe that was a deal all along.
Yeah. And that'll be kind of interesting. I'm a little sad because Miguel Oliveira a few years ago was like my up-and-coming rider to watch. He was the guy I was going to start rooting for and start putting bets on and whatnot. And then he had his falling out and just didn't go anywhere.
Yeah, sometimes that's just the way the cookie crumbles, man.
Yep. But now he's going to go to World Superbike, and BMW is a great package over there. Right, BMW.
I wish I could get you in all the lore in F1 so you see all like all the feelings you have about these drivers for the past few years. I've got all of that for a whole different set of riders for a whole different reasons, a whole different sets of dramas. People going to teams they shouldn't have, like they may have gone to, they should not have gone to.
Yeah.
All the different pains on that and how that's changed the trajectory of their career because they were too like, oh man, there's a lot of that. Yeah. It's fun because I talked to you about this, then I talked to our other friend Josh who. The other F1 guy about F1, and we just go back and forth of like the drama. I feel like I'm spoiled. I get it from both. I get it both.
Friend in both.
Yeah, I was talking to him about it today. I'm just spoiled.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go research some Miguel Oliveira stuff to get up to date now.
Well, and I just, I have a bad feeling. Luckily, he's going over on the BMW.
Was Top Rack's teammate doing anywhere near as good on the BMW? Was it just Top Rack?
He was mostly just Top Rack. Yeah, I think he was doing okay. I don't know. Let me look that up real quick because I don't want to steer anyone wrong.
Grant, I have not been following World Superbike outside of the fact that I know Top Rack's been winning. I've been seeing clips of that.
Yeah. World Superbike final standings.
The one thing I will say I saw from World Superbike other than that was not necessarily World Superbike, but it was like the Ducati race. Where all the Ducati riders rode the new Ducati.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was pretty interesting to watch.
Click here to view full standings as opposed to anywhere else. Okay. I need to know Buluga Bautista Locatelli. It doesn't say.
Well, Bulligan and Bautista, those are both Ducati. I can't want to say Ferrari, but they're Ducati riders. I know they ride the red.
It doesn't say what bike they're on. Locatelli, Petrucci, Lowe's.
Doesn't Petrucci used to be MotoGP?
So Locatelli, Andrea Locatelli. I'll look him up and see. And then that's the last I'm going to do. Yeah, he did. He was in MotoGP. He was also in Moto America for a little bit. Locatelli, Italian motorcycle racer. Looks like he was on a Yamaha this year. So I don't think the other BMW was anywhere near Top Rack. But a BMW did win in Moto America. They've won, 2 years in a row in World Superbike now. Like, BMW's got a package. They know what they're doing out there. The CEO or somewhere in the BMW world, a finance dude or a guy that cares about the finances, said that he doesn't know why they would go to MotoGP or why anyone does, because of the financial commitment it is and how you don't get any money out of it. He said it's just purely glory is all you're getting, which
makes sense, because we saw Suzuki bought and they had the financial troubles.
Yeah, and I mean, it kind of makes sense, because, Ducati, Honda's big enough and making enough money elsewhere. I think it's hard for BMW because they don't sell many bikes anyway.
Yeah.
So they don't really need the glory.
They probably feel like they're getting plenty of sales. It's weird, right? Because World Superbike, theoretically,
you can
buy the bike on the street. Now, the internals of that and everything under the fairings is so wildly different from anything that you would have, but I can still sell the illusion of you can buy this.
Well,
and theoretically, if you had the money, you could upgrade it. It would just cost you way more money.
Well, you can also go get the livery, though.
That's true.
You can make your bike look exactly like it.
Whereas, like, MotoGP, that is a formula bike. You will not get one of those unless you make a bet to win 3 GPs, and then you can take that home. Unless you do that. You will not get one of those for mass production.
Yeah.
So, like, there's an allure to it for the average consumer. It's like, well, this is one. This is objectively the fastest bike in the world, in my opinion. So why not just go buy this?
Yeah. No, I agree wholeheartedly.
It's like the whole like Ford versus Ferrari thing. Win on Sunday, sell on Monday.
Yeah. No, it's true. And the argument I have for BMW is like, yeah, but why not take the glory?
Because that glory doesn't translate to sales, and at the end of the day, they're in the business of making money. Like, it's one of those,
that's
like,
what sucks
the
about it.
Cost.
They're in the business of making money. They're not in the business of winning races and glory.
Yeah, they've never once portrayed that they were in specifically that niche.
Yeah, I'll give them that.
BMW does have a proud motorsport tradition. Like when they made the M3, back at like the original M3s, like that whole generations, the first couple generations of M3s, purely motorsport, purely racing.
Well, most of
and then they
cars,
sold it to us to have it homologated.
They're known for being a driver's car.
Yeah, but in terms of like motorcycles, the BMW name is a function of what it was for car racing. But in terms of the financial, in the terms of like the financials for motorcycles, it is not the same.
For motorcycles, the BMW name is actually purely, almost entirely, not sport bikes at all.
That's what I'm saying.
And
so when it,
like adventure touring bikes and whatnot.
Yeah.
So, yeah. No,
there's a special type of rider keeping the sales up for the BMW S1000 RR.
Yeah.
And I will say this, that's not me.
Fair.
And I would argue that I'm probably the majority.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense. Like, I like people like, or I don't know, how to phrase this. Whereas you'll see it all over like social media, the S1000 RR, and they do have fantastic sale numbers in the leader bike demographic. We've said it time and time again, the leader bike demographic is slowly
depleting. Well, and it wasn't really that big in the first place.
Yeah.
To be honest.
They're flashy because they're cool as hell.
Yeah.
They're like really cool. But the average motorcycle rider isn't buying leader bikes, and not in the numbers to like justify the manufacturing.
No. Yeah, absolutely not. The only reason that leader bikes really exist right now is because they have to, so that these manufacturers can race them.
Yeah.
And as soon as World Superbike says, "Hey, we're following MotoGP to 850s," those are gone. Like, those are immediately gone.
Like, if you could give me the 2010 asymmetrical headlights on a BMW, But a 600 motor in the BMW?
Oh, I was going to say, I can get you one of those, actually.
From
I know where one is for sale
When I get my... Give me, like, another year. I'm trying to get only... Maybe. We'll see what happens. But, like, give me that and a 600, and I'm like...
Yeah.
That'd be my forever bike.
Yeah, well, that is the only weird thing to me, is that BMW never chased anything else.
I, like... On one hand, I love them for standing on biz. Like, no, we make the best 1,000 you can buy. Money. We make the best 1,000 money can buy for the average consumer. And they stood on that. They stood on business for that.
Yeah.
That being said, like... Man, that 2010.
Yeah, but if they made an S750 or an S850RR,
it's like hotcakes.
Yeah.
Just like a parallel twin or a triple.
Yeah.
So like hotcakes.
Oh yeah, people would go nuts. Oh, imagine if they put one of their stupid boxer engines in it. That's what they're gonna do. As soon as the litter bikes are gone, they're gonna put a boxer engine in a freaking sport bike. Yeah. I doubt it. Anyway. I think that's going to wrap up MotoGP. We talked about just about everybody that matters, at least. Went through the grid for next year. 2026 is going to be wild. 2027 even more so.
I got a question for you. It's not a MotoGP question, though.
Hey, what you got?
How's the R9s doing in Moto America?
I think they did okay.
Oh, just okay?
Yeah. I don't think they were amazing yet. I'm pretty sure Ducati still won.
Is that Josh Herron?
Yeah, let's see. Moto America.
We didn't go to Moto America this year. I'm going to Moto America next year.
Standings. Perfect. Results. PJ Jacobson.
Matthew that's Schultz Ray Hall Ducati. First.
PJ Jacobson in second.
Yeah, that's Ray Hall. That's like, not Ray Hall. That's Expel. He's Kayla Jackoff's
teammate. Okay. So, Matthew Schultz on a...
Well, Schultz, he's stereotypically R6 people, so he's probably on the R9 if he's still at Yamaha.
Yamaha. Took first and third. Yeah, Ducati second, Suzuki in fourth,
yeah,
and then Ducati. So R9s are doing great.
I got a buddy. He really wants to ride the R9. I'm curious to see what it is, because I've been hearing it's doing really good times, and you get all the torque of a bigger motor, more immediate, and it's in competition with like the R6s. So objectively, like I've heard, it's beating them.
Yeah, I've and because heard very it has similar
the,
things,
and it's cheaper because it's in. It doesn't have R6 inflated prices, but and it has like all the rider aids of a big liter bike, which unfortunately, however you choose to phrase it, rider aids and all the electronics have really been pushing sales for a lot of riders.
Yeah.
Despite what your opinions would be. Yeah, I'm of the opinion of like on a street bike, all you need is ABS for safety reasons, everything else just detracts from your skill as a rider. That being said, when you get to the bigger bikes, you know, if you don't want to go sideways, you should
the only one control. That I will fully stand behind is clutchless shifting.
Yeah, the more I ride the bike, the more I think that's probably pretty cool.
It's just so much easier, which is me being lazy as a rider. On the street, yeah, ABS is good.
I'm surprised you, of all the talk you had, I'm surprised you never got that RC390 for up clutches up and down.
Because I've heard so many bad things about the RC390.
Oh, okay. Because I remember back in the day, you used to talk about that. And I'm like, for $5,000, it'd be so easy to buy that, figure out if you like it or not, and have a little toy to be in here for small tracks, or just for practice. And it'd be so much cheaper on tires, gas, running drills. And if you wadded it up, it's like $5,000. $5,000 is a lot of money for some people, but like... I look at this and I'm like, you could sell any one of these and then have money. You have money for the bike and the program for the rest of the season.
Yeah. No, it definitely crossed my mind. I did some research on it. And even with the issues that I've heard they had, I still thought about it pretty heavily.
Because the only thing I would think about would be in that category for like clutches up and down, possibly that would be in that power band wise, like a ZX4R. But the ZX4R has ZX4RR prices, which is the problem.
Yeah, it's also not in the same race category.
Yeah, it's not the same race category. Yeah, but I meant like in terms of like this is not a lead. This is not a leader bike. This is not a Gixxer 750. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But you'd be paying like you can just get a 400, mod the 400, and you'd have everything that the ZX4R would have.
Well, I think that's why the
minus a few features.
I think that's why the new R7 is.
Yeah, I'm just gonna leave that there.
Is preaching to me so much? It's because they are finally getting the new electronic package.
I don't have that, and I love my R7. I could see why they're selling so good.
I mean, I really enjoyed yours. You know, I rode yours around a barber, and even not being able to, you know, I wasn't able to really ride it for a multitude of reasons. One being, it was my first day at barber. Two being, I did one session on it. Three, it's not my bike, it's yours, so I'm not going to wad it up, so I'm not going to ride it to anywhere near the full extent. And then four, I was stuck down in a group that I shouldn't have been in, arguably.
You're still on that?
Yeah.
It's been over a year. you gotta let it go.
I'm not happy about it.
You gotta let it go, dude.
Yeah, I mean, the R7 was a fun bike, and it just made sense. And I've tried telling some other people about that, and I don't know if I got my point across, but I've ridden a lot of different bikes, and leader bikes make sense. They're big, yeah. They're heavy, they got power. They take a lot of work to rope around and go nuts on, but they make sense.
I think the average person who's a street rider just won't understand that until they ride all the bikes, but like, it is so much work. I will say this, I've never ridden a leader bike in any capacity that's not like moving it around from point A to point B, and that's like barely riding it, right? Mm-hmm. It is so much less work to flip a 600 over compared to the R7. Like, just the R7 was just so much less work. I was able to just turn more laps because I was like, I could whip this all day. People who say just get a 400 and then practice on that just for sheer, like, track time, for, like, easy on tires, you get less physically worn out. Like, I get it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then, yeah, I mean, when I rode yours, that was, it just... The other nice part about it is that I would argue the 660 was very similar. It was light-ish, and it was relatively easy to whip around.
I don't think that'd be better, because you have all the, like, the, if you wanted rider aids, you have all of that. Granted, you do pay a couple more grand for it, but like, I think it's faster. You have the rider aids, and objectively, it's a little more powerful too. Yeah.
So yeah. So I was toying with what I wanted to do, where I wanted to go next, and the 660 was kind of the answer. The only reason I didn't really want to, this is going to sound really weird, is because I already had an Aprilia, and I was like, I don't know if I want another Aprilia. Not that I have an issue with them, but you know, if I'm going to have a bunch of bikes in my garage, I don't want the same bike five times. Sorry. I want a collection of different stuff. And so the 660 was kind of my answer, but I rode that one last year in Texas, and it just didn't make sense like the R7 did, because the R7 is not only lightweight and easy to flip around and low power, it's thin.
It is pretty thin.
It is a thin bike, and in between you, like when you're sitting on it, you don't feel like you're on this big, massive bike. And that was the weirdest thing about the Aprilia, that the 660, that is so hard to explain to people.
Just like, I guess about the gas tank, with the weight.
The tank,
it curves
the size
your
of the
knee.
Fairing, all of that, yeah. Just makes it feel like such a big bike, but it's not. And it doesn't make it any harder to ride, per se.
That's really weird, because like, the bike I wanted to get, if I couldn't get the R7, was like the 660, but like at the time I didn't want to drop new bike money on my first bike. So like, well, I'm not going to get that. I want to pay less than 10 grand for this thing.
Yeah.
Then I'm going to get this one. Cause I even used, it was still running like 12 grand at the time for the same year 660. So that's like one of the reasons I ended up with the R7. Between that and all the propaganda you gave me like back in 2021 or 2020.
Yeah.
Whenever.
Well, I honestly think what I want to do throughout this year and next year, or 2026 and 2027, is probably go actually try and seek out some like Aprilia ride events and some Yamaha ride events, and go do track days where, like last year at CMP, I could have ridden the R9. Well, I don't know if they had an R9. No, it was an Aprilia ride day. And I could have ridden a new RS-V4, could have ridden RS-457.
Yeah, the 457s look pretty sweet.
But I was there for a race weekend, so I don't want to like go be on a different bike.
Because the guy that was there racing with you, who rode a green ZX6R, mm-hmm. he had taken the Aprilia, one of the Aprilias out earlier in that day.
So I would love to go kind of go ride the 660 again and go ride the new R7 and see how I feel on both of them before I make that final decision. But I do think that the R7 is kind of the direction that I am leaning. But we'll see. I'm not done with the big bike yet.
Well, Lord knows you got a bunch of them right here. You got this one, you got that one. I guess that one's not yours, that's Cole's. You got that one, you got this one.
Yeah, I could always take the old Sportster out on the track. I do actually want to do that once I get the...
You could. I was at CMP, we saw a couple baggers out there.
Yeah, once I get it running again, I will probably do that. I think it'd be kind of fun. What? And I need to do something with the brake. Not that it was bad, but it wasn't good.
What about Texas? We can talk about that.
Yeah, we can talk about Texas. Texas, Texas, Texas. So, if you guys don't know, if you don't follow the podcast, we're good friends with a man named Josh Bittinger, who operates Bittinger Motorsports down at the Bittinger Motorsports campus, which happens to be at MSRH, which is not Motorsport Ranch. It is Motor Speedway Resort, Houston.
I'm not going to lie to you. Motorsport Ranch is... I don't know why we thought for weeks and weeks and weeks is Motorsport Ranch, but it just feels so right.
Because there are many other tracks that are Motorsport Ranch
yeah.
that are MSR. But we did a trip down there last November in 2024. We had a ton of fun. It was awesome. And we had so much fun that we decided to roll it back and do it again in 2025 and have committed, budget and work schedule pending, to making it an annual thing around the October, November, December timeframe. Well, I don't want to lock in November officially, but we're going to try and keep it in that relative time frame. So if you're trying to come ride with JK Moto Entertainment and team, mark your calendars, MSRH next year, sometime in the fall, more dates to come later on. But we decided to do it again this year, took a couple extra friends, and dude, I had
a blast. A
ton of fun.
It was like really surreal to see, I'm still not where I want to be, but it's really like surreal to see improvement from like last year to this year. And then to see like the mini motos course, like what it was and what it is now, and then how it's like improving.
Mm-hmm.
And then I really dig the MSRH track. It's like, if you can be patient, like it feels like it rewards you.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's super fun. I mostly just enjoy the experience. But you stayed with Josh again this year.
Yeah.
I think there is not much cooler than waking up at a racetrack 4 days in a row.
I will say this. The last day there, I learned the downsides of like living there. If you're not part of the event that's going on,
yeah.
there are a lot of people that are now at the track. Whereas yeah. everything last year and this year, with the exception of that one last day when we all left, we effectively had the track to ourselves.
Yeah,
it was like a few people show up during the day. Like all the members would show up during the day. You'd have generous sashes on the track if it wasn't straight up open track. That first we had open track,
mm-hmm.
I was fighting for my life. I was getting tired, but I was like, I gotta go back out there and get it.
No, it was awesome. It was great.
But in that last day when like, if you don't know, like it was a Thursday before like a weekend event, so people just started showing up,
mm-hmm.
and it just got kind of crowded.
Yeah,
which makes sense because that's what happens at any track day. Like,
yep, no, absolutely.
It was just weird. It was just wild to see. Like, it was like, you know, like it was just so empty, like at night.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden just.
Then at night it was packed.
Yeah.
It was cool like during the days when you see like all the like the supercar events were going on. Mm-hmm. But at night it would clear out. But then that last day, that night it was packed because they were going to be packed lemons, the next day. Man. I was like, wow,
lemons came in hard. But yeah, no, yeah, it was.
That means they're getting good utilization. That's what that means.
Yeah, no, it was a great trip. Tons of fun. Spent 4 days. Let's see, you guys did mini motos again, level one, and then we had two open track days, which was freaking awesome, with some private coaching from Josh Bittinger, and then we finished the weekend or the week off with the level two mini motos, the Black Star course, which I don't know if you enjoyed that one as much as I did.
I had a lot of fun. It was definitely, I feel like, above my skill level at the time.
Which is fine.
Because as the day went on, I was definitely struggling to keep up.
Yep, and it is, I mean, it's not meant for a beginner rider. It's barely meant for a beginner racer, I think. It's really kind of meant for someone that's been, well, I guess beginner racer. Sure.
I will say this, though, like the discussion portion of the class, I did get a lot from. Just like how do you like look at a corner, the geometry of it and the track and all the things that go into it. How do you pick the ideal line that could go fast? Just that thought process is something I never really had thought about. And it was cool to like, now that we talked about it, we can implement it.
Mm-hmm. Be able to go test it real life.
That like in the first half of the portion, I like really enjoyed, and I'd be down to tone my skill level a little bit, and then go back so I can get more out of it from the practical application. But the theoretical part, like I just had never thought about corners like that in general.
Yeah,
and then he would like give you different examples, mm-hmm. and then you when you tested the different things, and I watched you and Corey go through the things with like the different lines, and then you see you're good at this, he's good at this other thing. But then you both had to apply to see what you were better at, and like you were better at one weight and he was better the other way, even though you both did it both ways, just because like you were objectively better at this and he was better at this thing. Like that was really cool, because then that's something that you as a rider could go, well, I'm better at this skill set. Mm-hmm. Maybe objectively this would be faster, but with my skill set, if I do this, I'll be faster.
Yeah.
That and then how to set up a pass, I think, was very interesting.
It's awesome. I enjoyed the course a lot, and we're not going to dive into too much detail on that. There will be a review coming out on the course and also a review coming out on the updates at MSRH or the Bittinger Motorsports campus as we know it here so well. But yeah, the Black Star course, level two, it was awesome. A little bit of race line engineering is what I called it, and yeah. I think hopefully that name will stick around. That's what we'll call it.
I think we'll try to get some more friends to come down next time, make it an even bigger thing.
There you go. So, yeah, Texas MSRH. There's also plenty of other good tracks down there if you live down there.
They're eating good down in Texas.
Oh, yeah. It is a membership track, and I will also be putting a video out soon on how track days might be changing here in the future. Maybe not the near future, but in the future. There are some things that are starting to happen across the country that could be good, could be not as good. Depends on how you look at it and where you stand on it. But we'll be putting that out on the channel here to come shortly. So stick around. Once again, subscribe. And I think that's gonna finish this up, dude. Unless you got anything else.
No, I got nothing else.
All right. Well, for the last time, we're going to go ahead and sign off. And for all of our long-term listeners, subscribers, and everything else, thank you for listening. Thank you for being here with us. This is 3 seasons complete now, over 115 episodes.
You know what's funny? When I was with our buddy who has the R1, mm-hmm. and I was getting to my first track day, this is what I listened to when I went to my first track day.
It has been a staple for a few. I'm not going to say many because the numbers are small, but we've enjoyed it. It's been a ton of fun, and I definitely appreciate all the listeners for supporting us through the years. And like I said, it's not necessarily completely disappearing, but we are definitely going to be done for the remainder of 2026 or 2025. And it'll be kind of one-off episodes for the next little while. But keep in touch with us on the YouTube channel, on Instagram, on Facebook, at JK Moto Entertainment for all three. Follow us, subscribe, like, whatever it might be for whatever platform. And we will continue to send updates your way. And yeah, if there's another podcast episode, I'll definitely make an announcement about it and put it out. But thanks again. We will see you guys over on the YouTube channel.
Yeah.
Or at the track.
Oh, there we go.
Go do a track day.
You ever drag your knees on the ground at 100 miles an hour?
100 miles an hour.
You ever drag your knee on the ground at 100 miles an hour?